So we don't need to use the cells anymore? No, only this one.
Just the swap.
Okay. Yeah, so very good morning. So today's talk, I will not call it as a lecture, so I will call it as a talk on the speaker recognition. So probably the slides are prepared by the Christoph, so I'm just picking his slides and trying to see what I can provide you with more information. So when we talk about the speaker recognition, so mainly it is I will say, like, it is one of the early biometric modality that explored a lot of machine learning techniques. So before these machine learning techniques made their way for the face or other kind of biometrics, these are well exploited when people started working on the speaker recognition. So why it got famous? Because the way we speak to each other is the way what people started liking. So they thought that if we can recognize a subject based on the way they speak to you, then it would be more best way to interact with the device that you want to use for the recognition. So whenever we think of the speaker recognition, so it is basically your voice. That is how it is generated in your vocal track. So basically, the frequency components of the voice from your vocal track is providing an unique information which can be processed further to identify a particular subject based on the vibration of the vocal track. So the voice is the thing that is very much useful for the speaker recognition. So in general, so when we talk about the speaker recognition, there are two different ways. The first thing is called as an text dependent. So meaning that you are always asked to speak to the system using only one part of the text. So for example, so you will train your speaker recognition system using the text called "My name is XX," and every time you want to get authenticate using the system, you need to speak the same sentence. So this is called as a text dependent. And the other kind of system is the text independent. So you go to the system, you speak for a second or you speak for a minute, whatever you want, and the system should automatically recognize you. So these are the two different kind of the things. And depending upon the complexity or the depending upon the application, the speaker recognition system is made up of either text dependent or the text independent. So when we compare text dependent and the text independent, the most challenging thing is the text independent speaker recognition. So, and also what makes the speaker recognition more challenging is the environment in which the people tends to speak. For instance, if you are using your iPhone Siri, so you try to speak it to Siri in wherever you want, right? So you will be traveling, you will be driving, you will be in the pubs, you will be in the hotel, you will be in the very crowded scenarios, and you talk to speak to it, and obviously a lot of noise is impeding on the speech signal. So that makes the things more challenging. So that resulted in several magnitudes of the machine learning techniques. So it all started with a simple Gaussian mixture model. So if we just recall what we studied in the machine learning class, so we started with then basic rules of the probability, addition rule and the subtraction rule, and then we derived the Bayesian rules or the Bayesian theorem, whatever. So, and then we try to discuss on the generative and the discriminative models. So these generative and the discriminative models, both of them are very much applied for the speaker recognition. So just to recall, in case of in the generative models, we always use or we always assume the underlying distribution of the data. So you try to model the data. So one of the popular way of doing it is the Gaussian mixture models, because you can approximate the arbitrary distribution of the data using different Gaussians with different mean and variance. And the other kind of the model is the discriminative models. You don't care what data is, but you directly take the data and then you start categorizing the data. So one best example for this, what we learn in the machine learning class, is the linear discriminant analysis. You just throw the data on the space, then you try to model the data so that you can learn a new axis on which you will project the data, so that the inter and the between class and the within class variance is maximized. So once you project to that axis, the two classes, what you want to classify, will be more separable. So these are the two techniques, discriminative as well as the generative models, that are extensively used in the speaker recognition. So what I'm trying to convey in this class is the very, I will say it as a very high level information, just to give you a notion of what is happening in the field, and to discuss one of the paper from the Christoph student called Andreas on doing the pre-selection of the speakers, of pre-selection of the audio signals to improve the performance of the speaker recognition system. So with this backdrop, so we start today's class. So idea of this session is we start with a very quick introduction. So then we discuss on the speech production, so your voice is generated in the vocal tract. And then we have two different kind of processing here. So one is called as in the front end. So in case of in the front end, it mostly like capture, mostly like recording your speech and processing to get a features out of it. So just like any modalities that you use, FAS or PowerPoint, whatever. So the first step is the pre-processing. So if you are using FAS, you take the face image, then you try to find some of the features to generate a template. Along the same lines, so you can use the speech signal also, process it, and generate some of the features, and these features in turn can be used for the classification or the comparison. So that is called as in the front end. So mainly it is a signal processing, because the speech is a one-dimensional signal, and most of the techniques that are developed for the feature extraction is basically derived from the signal processing theories. So one such example is the use of the filter banks. So that is widely used in the speaker recognition. And the back end is thoroughly a machine learning and the classification. It all started with a very simple distance measure called dynamic time wrapping. Probably you all studied the DTW in gait recognition. And the same technique was earlierly used to measure the two different speech signal. But as the complication of the speech signal rises, for instance, the recording in noisy environments, a lot of noise into the speech signal, then comes the very sophisticated machine learning techniques. So during the early 80s, so the popular machine learning techniques that was introduced by MIT is on the universal background model derived from the Gaussian mixture model. So you given a set of speakers, you model it to Gaussian, and then you try to use your trained models to recognize the speaker. So that was a very breaking techniques for the speaker recognition. And from recently, like past 7 and 8 years, most of the techniques are derived from the Gaussian mixture models towards modeling the channel of the speech from where it is originating. So earlier people tried to analyze the speech as a whole. Now they try to divide the speech into the speaker component and the channel component. And then you try to model both speaker component and the channel component such that irrespective of the channel from which the speech is originating, you need to model a channel so that the noise which are originating from the channel has been automatically taken off, and then you get a nice signal which can be compared. So to model that, they call it as a super vector derived from a Gaussian mixture model. And the super vector will give rise to a joint factor analysis where you try to analyze the factors like speaker independent, speaker dependent, channel independent, and residue channel factors. So four different factors are modeled together. So you mean the four different Gaussian mixture models. So then these four different Gaussian mixture models are combined together to obtain a joint factor analysis. Once you get a joint factor analysis, you get a long feature vector. Then they thought, why we use such a long feature vector? Shall we select a intermediate features that give rise to an I vectors? And I vectors today is the state of the art. So it is well proved in many competitions organized by NIST, and also the other conferences that use of I vector is quite prominent and quite promising for the speaker recognition. So that is the state of the art now in the back end. So now the challenges in speaker recognition still remains because of the challenges of the environment that are evolving, and also the way people tends to use the speaker recognition for the various application. And in the last, there is a quick update on the recent advances that are made. Well, to start with in the introduction, so I think so, as you can see from the figure there, so authentication in the recognition by voice. So basically we have a same convention that any biometric system can follow. You have a reference voice sample. You do the feature extraction, that is your front end, and then you do some back end processing and you place it on the comparison. So whenever the probe will come, you do the same front end processing with the feature extraction, Then depending on the probe ID, you retrieve the corresponding enrolled subject there. Then you put it on the comparison system. Comparison system will retrieve the corresponding voice features from the database, and it compares within the probe features to give the comparison score. So based on the comparison score, you make the system to be accept or the reject. The only thing to be noted here is your input signal is 1D, and your front-end systems are mainly the filter bank-based systems, and your back-end systems are extensively the machine learning techniques. So this is the only difference. And there are several applications that one can see here. At least the three different applications are placed here. So the first thing is on the call center user validation. So basically it's a text independent kind of the thing. So whenever you have a call center application, so idea is to automatically identify a caller based on the way you speak. So it's basically a free speech, and variant duration is from 5 seconds to 10 seconds. And mainly the mobile device authentication, you speak to your mobile, it should unlock automatically, just like a face recognition or your touch ID. So instead of using your fingers, you try to speak to the mobile, and then it should unlock. But of course, the Siri is not unlocking your phone till now anyways. But still, you can use other... There are some existing apps for doing that anyways. So then the suspect tracking, this is more towards the forensics. So we don't know when the terrorists or any suspect, or it may be a criminal background or someone who is talking to each other. And in some sense, due to the cross-channel cancellation or due to some cross-channel interference, you will get a small piece of the voice. And then from the small piece of the voice, you should extract the forensic information, like what is the conversation meant and what are the code words, or we can decode and so on. So basically towards the forensic application. So if you can identify the content of the speech existing due to the cross-channel interference, or extracting from the cross-channel interference towards the forensic application is the suspect tracking. And there are various contents in the signal qualities, because you don't know from where it is emerging and what kind of source they are using to communicate the speech. For instance, if they are using a line telephone from somewhere in the world, and you by accidentally catch hold of that signal, then you need to, it's a quite challenging because of the lot of the background noise involved into it, and because of the language they are using. So most of these speaker recognition systems are mainly towards the language oriented. For instance, if you train my system for speaking in the English, if I come and speak to the same system in the Norwegian, then probably it's quite difficult to recognize the thing. So these things still exist. And the third thing, the suspect tracking, is quite interesting application of the speaker recognition. Well, so then there are some thoughts about the voice and the other modalities. So as you can see, there are the different environments from where one can expect the speech signals to emerge. So as you can see, in case of in the clean, everything is a clean. You sit in this kind of environment, you speak to the speaker recognition unit. There is no background noise, unless some noise from the projector that can be automatically cancelled because it's a uniform noise. Apart from that, you don't observe any kind of the noise. So it's quite easy to process the signal because signal is clean. Then you have a nice recognition rate. But as the signal become more spontaneous or even the more continuous, lot of variations, articulations, and depending on the environment, whether you are in a party or whether you are in the noisy or the crowdy environment, or whether you are in a shopping mall, then the complexity of analyzing these signals will also increases in the magnitudes. And the last kind of thing is the transmission channel. For instance, if you want to do the banking application by speaking to your ATM, then probably somewhere your speech sample need to be stored before you start using that application, because it's a verification. So if you want to use the verification system, then the biometric system must have an idea of the subject. That means that the subject is already known to the system, meaning that the sample should be stored somewhere in the system. And if you assume that in case of in the banking, the samples are stored in the backend server of the banks, then it needs to be communicated to a channel. If you are passing your signal to a channel, then again the quantization, digitization, everything will come into picture. Channel noise will be added to the signal, then the noise will be introduced into the signal. So these kind of things will provide a lot of challenge to the speaker recognition. Well, to understand how the speech or the speech is produced in our vocal tract. So as you can see from the left side figure there, so you can see the vocal folds there. That is the source of originating of your voice patterns, and the air from the lung will pass through the trachea, and then this particular part here, this will start vibrating depending upon the air you inhale and you throw out. And if there is no opening in the nose and the mouth, and basically these openings will act as a resonance for this. So once it acts as a resonance for this, then you get a nice voice signal. So idea is the air passes through this vocal fold and it will make to vibrate. That will make lot of sound. And these vibrations, if you close your mouth and mouth as well as the nose, then probably it is just a buzzing. Since these two are opening, allowing the air to pass in and take in, it will create as a resonance. As a result, you will get a voice. And depending upon the length of your vocal cord and the way it will vibrate, it is unique to the subjects. So that's the reason why the speech recognition is widely used. And if you can see the figures over there, one is across the time frame. So if you are talking to the mic with different vibrations or the different pitch, you can see the one-dimensional signal with the content over there. And the pitch frequency is something related to basically the related to the vibrations here. So if the vibration is high, your pitch is high. So it's directly proportional. So this vibration is happening. So this is how the speech signal is produced. So the intake of the air to the lungs will make the vibration there in the vocal folds, and depending on upon the length of the vocal folds and the vibration pattern, it is more unique to the subject. And your openings in the mouth and the nose will act as a resonance that will make the that will give rise to a voice signal. And the important part of this generation of the voice signal is the pitch, and the pitch is directly proportional to the vibration or the frequency at which your vibration is taking place in the vocal fold. Well, so continuing within the speech production, the speech analysis, the frequency analysis by the Fourier transform is widely used, because it is quite difficult for us to separate out the component of the pitch, for instance, where exactly the vibration is happening. If you look into the top left picture over there, so it is quite difficult to separate those envelopes, which are very close to each other. So one possible thing is to get into the frequency domain. So basically, when you go to the frequency domain, it is easy to differentiate the pauses between these pictures, the small units which are over there. So that's the reason why the frequency domain representation is quite famous. So if you see the right top corner picture, so that's the frequency magnitude. And if you use some kind of sliding window to smooth the signal, and it's nothing but a Fourier transform is what you have taken. It's a one-dimensional Fourier transform if you take, then you get that signal there. So all the red colors, what you can see, will indicate the activity period of the voice. And all the things which are pausing there, and these things will indicate no activity of the voice. So then if you are interested how your vocal tract will act for the different kind of the vowels, so there are some couple of examples for the different kind of the vowels, that how the vocal tract will react, and the opening and the vibrations for different kind of words here, the people pronounces, and you can see the opening of your mouth and nose here, and the vibration pattern. So the opening goes up, the signal will be reflected following this kind of words. So this figure will indicate how the change and the constitution of the vocal tract basically. So if you speak certain words, this is how the variation of the vocal tract will happen in production of the speech signals. Well, so the very famous front-end system that commonly used and which is still using is based on the male frequency spectral coefficients. So when we analyze the speech signal, so possibly there are There are, we say, like two broad ways of doing it. The first thing is to model the speech signal based on which it is generated or synthesized. So that is called as a predictive coefficients. And the other method, which is quite famous or which is quite robust, is Mel frequency spectrum. So basically, these kind of the features are modeled by your human auditory system, because your ear will act as a filter. It will not allow all the frequencies to get inside your ear. So it is basically a filter. So Mel frequency spectral coefficients are derived by modeling your ear auditory system. So basically, ear is a kind of filter banks that can allow only certain frequencies to pass through the system ear. So the same thing was used as an motivation to develop this kind of feature extraction. So it has a couple of steps how to do this. So we start within the speech signal there, then we do some kind of segmentation so that you can take only the voice activity durations from the speech. So you take out all the past period by doing a simple Fourier transform. Then that is called as in the segmentation. Then you do the frequency analysis. Simply take the 2D Fourier transform, and then you do the filter bank processing. So basically, the filter bank processing is like this. Each of these filters is set at a different cutoff frequencies, and the signal will be passed to those cutoff frequencies. So the signal is filtered in the filter banks. Once you do that, then the output of the filter bank is processed using a spectral transform. So it's a spectral and the spectrum. So these two are the two things. The spectrum is the frequency content, and the sepstrum, if you take a log of it, you will get a sepstral thing. Spectrum and spectral. The spectrum is just a frequency thing, and the sepstral is the log of the frequency. So if you take the log of that, and then after doing the sepstral transform, there is also a possibility that people will use DCT on that, discrete cosine transform, to use the outcome of sepstral transform as the features. Otherwise, they will just use the differentials out of the sepstral transform. So this is how the intermediate features will appear. So you take the Fourier transform, and then you have this nice filter banks here, and this filter bank is basically derived based on your auditory nature. So it has certain filters with different cutoff frequencies that is derived from your auditory power. Then this is the outcome of the filter bank. Then you take the log out of it to get the spectral transform, and depending upon the time duration, because the speech signal is varying in the time, you just pass the signal in part by part, then for the different time you are going to align the features. So, and another important point is, it is not necessary that you will use all the frames in the voice. So then probably you may need to detect the voice activity period. So you have to do the voice activity detection, and then you use only the regions where the voice is very much active. So this is the very popular front end system called as Mel frequency sepstral features. So these are basically derived from the auditory nature of the human. So in addition to this, there are also many alternative things, as I already mentioned about the linear prediction. So these features are derived on the way how the speech is synthesized. So again, it is also using a kind of filter bank called as in the Bark filter bank. So basically, these are critical bands for hearing, again, in case of in the perceptual linear prediction. So basically, linear prediction of equal loudness and intensity spectrum. So this is how the PLP is derived. And similarly, we have other kind of things. So mean Hilbert envelope coefficients and medium duration modulation spectral coefficients. So what you can understand from the front end is, unlike the other modalities where you normally use a simple transformation like a texture features or something like that, we cannot straightforwardly use those kind of things on the speech. In all the existing front-end systems, the features of the speech signals or the voice signals are extracted by using in filter banks. And these filter banks are motivated based on your auditory things or from the way how the speech are synthesized. So depending upon the type of filter banks you employ, so we have a different representation of the speech signal. And this is just a visual comparison of amplitude and the and the face-based features. So because sometimes the face features also plays a very important role, because for instance, if you consider a piano, if you are playing a couple of notes, and if the sound from the two closed notes appears to be same, but if you represent them on the face, then you can see the differences in the face. So in along the same way, so one example what we can take is if you have a noise of the same characteristics or the same frequency that of the voice, then it is too difficult for us to differentiate when you just take the magnitude of the spectrum. Then you need to go and look for the face component of the speech signal. So if you get into the face, you can see the difference in the signal and you can filter it out. So that's the reason why the face-based features are also not that much widely used, but it was efficiently used in the voice, and they call it as in speech intelligence. So they also show that use of in the face-based features can also used for an speech intelligence derivation. So these are some of the examples of how different kind of amplitude and the face features will appear. So, and also the one of the wide application of these face-based features is also in detecting the spoof. Because when the spoof, for instance, if you generate a signal, obviously the frequency component of the synthesized speech is different than the natural speech. And you can easily use the face-based features to identify the differences in the face of the signal, but not in the frequency of the signal. So these are the examples of the print there. So top left is just an log magnitude spectrum, and top B is the residual log magnitude spectrum, and similarly we have group delay and we have modified group delays and corresponding phases in the bottom picture. Well, so another important thing in the front end is, because when we have a speech signal, it is not necessary to process the whole speech signal if there is no activity, because when we speak, we pause. Right, so when we pause, then obviously you don't have any activity of the voice over there, it's just a noise. So you want to take that out. So how do we do this? So the goal, for instance, the pictures that is already shown there. So if we take the goal, we need to omit the non-speech parts in the first picture there.
Here. So the non-speech part is this one here. And again, you have a non-speech part here. You have a lot of pauses when we try to speak. The idea is to take these pauses out from the signal. So there are different ways how it can be done.
So basically these approaches are broadly into energy and the model based. So whenever we refer the model based, then probably you are using a generative model to fit the distributions. And the energy is nothing but estimating a overall magnitude of the spectrum. And issue is the high signal to noise ratios are probably the very clean signals are required. So noise and signals are equal. If it is a 0 dB, then you can say that noise and signals are equal. So starting from the first figure, we have a nice speech signal present over there. And if you just take a Fourier spectra, you can see
that if there is no activity here, you hardly have any magnitude of the spectrum. And again, here you can see. So basically it will look for the pitch in the signal.
So then if you just take the magnitude of that is the energy based decision, then you can get a nice envelope here.
So depending upon the activity, you get an envelope for the magnitude, and you can see that if there is no activity, then it is more or less the pause.
And on that, if you use the MFCC and from the MFCC, if you just do some frame selection, then you can have
this kind of this. This is nothing but an high energy speech here. The low energy will indicate non-speech, and if it is an high energy, it will indicate the speech. And if you can learn a probabilistic model here, the speech versus non-speech, and if you estimate a likelihood at what regions the speech is present in this signal, so then you can see the lot of variations. And lastly, it's an hybrid decision, so you can combine any of these methods to achieve that.
So that's the idea. So idea of this voice activity detection is to separate out the speech part from the non-speech part. So the very basic way of doing this is simply if you take the Fourier transform,
and if you look for the magnitude of this Fourier transform, then you have this kind of envelope.
And if you want to have more accurate, way of computing the vice activity detection, then probably you can use the MFCC features. And from the MFCC features, if you do a frame selection, so then probably you can get a signal which is providing an high energy where the speech is present, and it is showing in low energy where speech is not present. And similarly, you can use your, or you can learn or train your likelihood models. So if you will train your likelihood model, that's how it will appears to be.
Yeah. Then in the end, you can use the
hybrid decision model also. Well, so now the important part of the speech signal processing, the modeling of the acoustic space. So idea is here to model the unknown distribution of the speech features. So we already know about the Gaussian mixture model from the machine learning class. So if you have a signal like this in the left hand side here,
if you try to model with a single Gaussian, it appears like this. But as you can see, the envelope is having different variation, and you try to approximate with a single Gaussian, which is not an exact approximation. But if you use multiple Gaussian, possibly like this, with different mean and variation, then you can make a close to
exact approximation of the signal density. So in the figure B here, so this is just a contour plot here of the different Gaussian with the mean and variances. And what is the basic idea of this is, so they try to train the universal background model. So basically the universal background model is, you take the example of the speech signals, we call it as a training data. So you use the training data and then you develop your likelihood model. So whenever we develop a likelihood model, basically,
so for instance, if I have one Gaussian like this, so this is a different component, the different class, you can say, and we have another class like this, for instance. So whenever we say the Gaussian mixture model, so we always model this class, for instance N, if we say it as an X, we have a mu for this particular class, let this be K, and we have covariance of this. So this is a covariance matrix. So
once we, how we do this is basically in any of these space.
For instance, if you take a two-dimensional space like this, for example, if you have a two class like this,
if you want to initialize a Gaussian mixture model, you need to have a prior knowledge or an initial guess. We can call it not a prior knowledge; it's an initial guess of mean and variance of the data. So what people will try to do is, they try to do the clustering here as an initialization. For instance, you can use a k-means clustering, and once you do the clustering, you will get an approximate value for the mean.
For instance, if this is one class here, I will get some mean over here. If this is the second class, I will get the mean over here. And then you estimate the variance in the data. Once you have a mean and the variance, you can initialize a Gaussian signal like this. One Gaussian signal for this, and you can initialize second Gaussian signal for this.
Once you initialize this Gaussian signal, then we need to optimize this because of the variance involved in the signal. In order to do this optimization, there is a widely used method, and we're quite famous, called as an expectation and maximization. So in every iteration, it runs in iteration, similar to the gradient descent algorithm that we learned last time. It runs in an iteration, and in every iteration, different value of the mean and the variances, since it is a mixture model, we need to estimate mean and the covariance between these two, so that your distribution will somehow get approximated to the envelope of the signal. So this is how the universal background model is learned. So you take a training data. With the training data, you need to fit your Gaussian mixture model. To fit the Gaussian mixture model, you need to start with an initial guess on the distribution of the data. To start with the initial guess of the distribution of data, you can simply plug in your clustering technique, for instance, the k-means. That can give you the different clusters. on each of these clusters, you start initializing with a single Gaussians, and to approximate or to properly model these different Gaussians together, you need to estimate mean and the covariance. To estimate the mean and the covariance, you can just plug in the expectation and maximization algorithm. So expectation maximization algorithm is similar to that of in the gradient descent, what we studied in the last class. It runs in an iteration. For the every iteration, it will predict the mean and the covariance, and we have a fitness function, and that will approximate to the envelope of the signal. So this is how it is done. Well, this is some of the slides that Christoph has included for the basics of the probability. So probably I would like to skip this because we already studied in machine learning. So now this is the extension of what I was telling here, the expectation and the maximization. So basically the expectation step is trying to maximize the bound with respect to the hidden parameters, and the maximization is with respect to the parameter of the data, parameter of the theta. So theta, what is mentioned, will correspond to mean and the covariance. And you can see how the iteration will update here. So this is the initial guess here. So you start with the mean and the variance, and then you plug in your EVM. As the iteration is going, you can see that the Gaussian are more fitting towards the distribution of the data. So this is all about the front end processing of the speech recognition system. So just to sum up, in the front end, once you record your speech signal, the first thing is you need to identify where exactly the activity of the voice is there. To estimate the activity of the voice, you can use a simple Fourier transform, take the magnitude of it, you get the energy will give you an envelope. So you can segment the speech activity period based on that. If you want a more sophisticated technique, you can still use the MEL frequency spectral coefficient features, and from that also you can select a couple of filters where the activity point is high. There also you can segment the activity region of the speech. And the third thing is you can use a sophisticated likelihood models where you can train for the activity period, and then you can still segment the activity part of the speech signal. And the last thing is the hybrid models, where you combine different models together to get the activity period. So this is on the activity detection. And then comes the feature extraction. The very popular kind of feature extraction is MFCC, the MEL frequency spectral coefficients, and these are derived based on your auditory nature of the humans, based on modeling the ear characteristics of your human ears. So it is nothing but a filter bank. And each filter bank has a cutoff frequencies derived from the ear auditory characteristics. So you just pass your signal, you take the Fourier transform, put the spectral signal into MFCC, then output of the MFCC, you take the log of it, you will get a spectral features. So once you get a spectral features, you can still use the DCT over that to get your features over there. And since the speech is a time-varying signal, you do this in the windows. You have a signal like this, for instance. So you start with a small window like this. You can go with a non-overlapping windows, or you can also go with an overlapping windows. So you take this, you do all the things for the feature extraction, then you get one set of features, then you slide your window, you get another set of features. Like this, you try to concatenate. So this is all about the front end, and also in case of in the universal background models, you try to learn the model based on the training data. The very famous thing is to use your Gaussian mixture models. So Gaussian mixture models will try to fit more than one Gaussian to approximate the distribution of the data. So in order to fit the Gaussian mixture model, you need to have an initial guess on the distribution of the data. To do that, you initialize a simple clustering algorithm to estimate the initial values of mean and variance. With that one, you initialize the different Gaussians, and then you try to optimize the mean and covariance so that you can bring all the Gaussians together and approximate to the distribution of the signal. And to do that, we have a technique called expectation and the maximization algorithm, which is an iterative based technique that will automatically optimize the value of mean and covariance. So once you learn this model, then you can use any of the probe speech signals, and then you estimate a log likelihood by comparing your probe with a trained model. to make the speaker identification. So to do that, we need to know about the backend, how we can do the classification or the comparison. So backend is highly derived from the machine learning techniques. So there are a set of machine learning techniques that are extensively used in the speaker recognition. It all starts from simple dynamic time wrapping, DTW algorithm, to compare two signals with a different time duration. And it also, there are a couple of works that was quite famous with the hidden Markov models also. So depending upon the characteristics of the speech, they try to have a different models for each of the phonemes or those kind of things. And in case of when the universal background model is what we studied right now, this can also be used as a classification scheme. And the support vector machine, what we studied in machine learning class in detail, that can also be used. And the most recent things is in the joint factor analysis, because most of these techniques which are above this never considered or lightly considered the channel characteristics of the voice or the speech signal. So these techniques like joint factor analysis try to analyze the channel characteristics of the speech signal from where it is derived. So basically the joint factor analysis will have a four different component. It will try to model the speaker dependent, speaker independent, channel dependent, and residue of the channel. And these four components are again modeled using your Gaussian mixture models. So four different models, and then these are combined to have a single decision. That is called as a joint factor analysis. Since the joint factor analysis is deriving a long feature, they thought of using an intermediate sized vector that is called as an I vector. So intermediate size vector will represent a compact representation of the features, which is proved to be an highly performing system till today. So it all started in 2009, and in all the computations that are organized by NIST or other thing, I vector based systems are performing extremely well. Well, to start with the dynamic time wrapping, so idea is, I think you probably already know about this, you have a two different signal with different time duration or the varying time duration. So obviously you need to wrap the signal to compare this. So wrapping of the signal of one signal against another signal will introduce a cost that you need to optimize while doing it. So idea is like two samples are varying. For instance, x and the y, you can see there x and the y. So y could be stretched against the x, and this stretching will create some of the cost in doing that. So the other kind of classification that I'm considering here is the GMM based universal background model. So if you already learned this model there, then you can simply estimate a likelihood ratio for the given probe sample. And depending upon the likelihood ratio, you can say whether it belongs to the same subject or not. So as you can see that if you are just estimating the likelihood ratio, it is quite fast compared to other kind of model based on the HMM, and it is mainly applicable for the text independent scenarios. So if you have a text independent scenario which is quite challenging, then you can train your system for the same speaker, asking him to speak a different text at one time. Then you can model that signal and using your GMM, then once he come back after some time for probing, he can speak any of the sentence. So you can use that, and you can do the speaker verification. So this is about the GMM UBM. So this is on the support vector machine. I think we already discussed a lot during the machine learning class, and we also tried to derive the maximum margin of this class. So basically, when compared to a conventional classifier, this is quite different because it is trying to maximize the margin. So if this is your optimum hypothesis, it will try to maximize this so that you will get a maximum margin here, which will close to the distribution of the data. So in this classifier, so we have plus one or the minus one as the classes, and we also learned why we have plus and minus and so on. So I'm just skipping this slide. Well, so this is all about the joint factor analysis. So the joint factor analysis, as I already pointed out, so main idea here is to model the channel characteristics in addition to the voice characteristics. So you will treat the voice and the channel as in two linear component in a superposition manner. So then you need to model channel and you need to model voice. Again, for modeling, you can use your Gaussian mixture models. So this is the underlining principle. For instance, the modeling speaker and the channel variability, as you can see here.
So this is the model for the speaker and for the channel, and you can still use your universal backbone model together with that.
And again, here also similar to the universal backbone model, we estimate the log likelihood ratio, so to make the final decision. And then this is more about the theory of the joint factor analysis and the GMM. So what is the outcome? I just want to give you a very brief idea here. So basically the super vectors are influenced by both the speaker, or both from the speaker characteristics and the channel vectors. And if you want to achieve a reliable decision, then your channel factors to be stable for all speakers. Why this is important? Because for instance, if you want to recognize a subject who is enrolled in a nice clean environment here, and if you want to recognize him when he speaks to the system in a crowdy behavior, so in the case of crowdy nature, so you have a lot of noise over there. If you can accurately model these channels from which the speech signal is originating, then you can get a very nice speech signal without any variation. It is quite easy to model. So again, as I already pointed out, you can use the four different components here in theory: speaker dependent, speaker independent, channel dependent, and residue of the channels. So these are the four different components, and for each of these four different components, you can train your Gaussian mixture models. So once you train your model, then you can take the log likelihood ratio to do the verification or authenticate the subject. And so the two things what you need to remember here in case of the factor analysis is basically in the covariance modeling, as it is presented there in the slide, it's a subspaces are fully covariance, and in case of in the residual, we have only diagonal covariance matrix. So this is the important thing. Well, so use of in the joint factor analysis is basically of generating a larger features. So idea is, can we offset it to the, for instance, if this is the model there, then we have like 30,000 features. Then we use three different technique here. We use LDA, so we know the linear discriminant analysis that we learned in the machine learning class, basically discriminative technique. And then we have WCCN, that is within class covariance normalization, and we have LNorm, that is the length normalization. So this is basically used to select a feature or to select intermediate features from 30,000 vectors there, which will reduce it to a small like 600 elements, from 30,000 to 600 elements. So to do that, we will use three techniques, that is increasing discrimination by LDA and then WCNN. So to recall what is linear discriminant analysis, this is basically a maximizes the ratio between classes, covariance to the within class covariance. Suppose to the covariance matrix, sometimes we also refer to as a scatter matrix. So that's a different way of naming it. So that is from the linear discriminant analysis, and once you do that, then you can also do within class covariance normalization. So basically the within class covariance normalization will tend to normalize the variability of the nuisance space, and basically it will decorrelate the elements to the axis. And in case of in the length normalization, basically the sample duration may affect the I vector length, but the same I vector length along the same data can also be derived. So use of these three techniques together on the joint factor analysis can give rise to an I vector analysis. Well, so extended version of this is by using a probabilistic linear discriminant analysis. So we all know what is linear discriminant analysis. So it's a discriminative method in which we try to project to a new space by maximizing the ratio of between class to and within class covariance or the scatter matrix. So that is what linear discriminant analysis. So if you add a flavor of probability or the generalizing models flavor to the linear discriminant analysis, then it will become a probabilistic discriminative analysis. So basically what we do is written there in the couple of the steps there. So first you obtain the subspace H by LDA. So the subspace, the word, the subspace I'm referring, if you recall from our machine learning class, we derived an axis on which the data is projected, right? Like that we can derive many axes that is based on your eigenvectors, so depending on the variance. So the subspace is one such space where the axis is derived. So that subspace is by the LDA, and then you have your Gaussian distributed Gaussian PLDA, that is GPLDA, then you try to model that as an Gaussian, and then you have this
different parameters here. The phi is between subject variance. If you have these four variance, which is within subject variance, then the model is given as a superposition of these. So you have mu, that is the mean, and then we have the function omega as well as in covariance here. The omega of H is the subject, and we have some noise added to this. And then again, you can use log likelihood ratio to compare this.
So what you can take home message from this is, you can do the LDA and you can model the distributions again using the Gaussian. And once you have this Gaussian modeling of the distributions, the easy way to compare with the probabilistic thing is the log likelihood ratio. So that's the thing. Just to sum up what has happened with the, what is there in the speaker recognition, state of the art. So we have both discriminative and generative techniques here. So basically in case of in the discriminative techniques, so you can start with a simple logistic regression. And in case of log likelihood ratio, there is no discriminative technique that use log likelihood ratio because we never use any kind of models over there. And which is basically in case of in the discriminative techniques, it is quite optimized to avoid the errors.
Some of the examples here, DTWSVM and I vectors in cosine. And in case of in the generative models here, you can start with the Bayesian rules. And you can use the different models here, like HMM, GMM, again with an I vector with Gaussian distribution and so on.
Well, just to sum up, like HMM and DTW gather on the text-dependent applicability. So it is there are models that are known that they perform well for the text-dependent kind of speaker recognition. And there are a couple of models that are known to perform well for the text-dependent in speaker recognition. So HMM and DTW are known for the text-dependent applications. And in case of in the I-vectors, GMM, these kind of the techniques, they are good especially for the text-independent speaker recognition. So in case of in the text-independent, we get a lot of training data that we can model using Gaussian mixture models. So again, the log likelihood ratios. So basically, whenever we model it within the distribution, so then we try to see the closest match based on the log likelihood ratio. So again, once you get a score, then you can do the score normalization and you can also try to do the calibration of this. Well, the basic challenges here, so as a brief prospect, so the short duration in the noise conditions, example, the bubble noise, so basically the speech signal, so just like in any kind of biometric modality, here also the noise plays a very vital role in determining the performance of the system. So the one such noise is the short duration noise. It may be a re-vibration, the Lombard effect or the high vocal effort speech or emotions like stress. Those kind of things will definitely affect the performance of the system. And there are a couple of challenges. NIST speaker recognition evaluation is there, a large database on the evaluation. And as I already pointed out, the use of I-vector based speaker recognition system is already proved to be a best performing system in all this kind of computation. And the last point to mention here is on the presentation attack detection. So just like in any modalities, the speech system is also vulnerable for these kind of attacks. So for the spoofing attacks, so mimicking, speaking like one person can also be used to attack the speaker recognition system. We can do the replay attack. Now I am talking. If I am using a text independent system, someone can record my voice here. you can play to that system to spoof my ID. So it's the same way. So we have replay attacks. You can synthesize the speech. There are a set of freely available tools in the internet you can use to synthesize the speech, and you can do the mock-up spoofing or you can do the voice impersonation. So just to add for the challenges in the speaker recognition, so technique needs to be improved when we have an unexpected noise in the speech. That's the one set. And then the other kind of challenges is mainly focused towards the presentation attack detection. And just to mention a couple of the odd topics which are going on with the speaker recognition is the use of deep neural networks. So basically the use of deep neural networks was first exploited for the speech. So all these complex techniques based on the autoencoders, restricted Bloch's math machines. So these are very first exploited for the speech signals. So now the idea is to use deep neural networks for the I vector extraction, that is to model the challenge, that is to model the channel characteristics. And again, the other things are based basically on uncertainty propagation and modeling and denoising by autoencoders and RBF restricted Bloch's math machines and quality and unconstrained environment. So a couple of works are going on estimating the audio quality of the speech, and then you can based on the quality of the speech you analyze, there is no need to select the whole length of the speech. Instead, you can select a cohort of it, meaning that a part or the group of the features where you find it is good quality. That can be used to compare it with the enrolled sample to achieve more good results. So that is on the quality and unconstrained environment. Well, so deep learning bottlenecks, basically it is motivated from automatic speech recognition. So in case of any of these deep learning things, if you can see over there, so there are two different systems here. One is on UVM and iVector framework, and other thing is here we have it on the deep neural network and again the IBM framework. So idea is to have these two systems combined together using and all. So these kind of complex systems are already in the place. So you try to learn as much as possible from the data you have. So for the most of these techniques, what you can observe here is the front-end system is basically on the same MFCC features. Only the back-end system is getting more complicated on using the deep learning techniques over there. And other kind of most advanced models include basically the fully posterior PLDA, and also some of the models also try to do some uncertainty in decoding. So basically, when we say the uncertainty or uncertainty decoding, again the models are based on the I vectors, and most of these posterior estimations are basically try to model the channel characteristics of the speakers where it is originating. So this is how the feature technique is emerging, and I try to explain one of the techniques that was developed by Christoph Student in Germany. So basically he tried to do a pre-selection. So idea of the pre-selection is if you have two different signals with you and you need to select a important component from that signal so that you don't need to consider full signal. So you just select the important characteristics. It may be based on the quality, for instance, and then you just compare those two pre-selected signals rather than full signal to achieve the good performance. Because of the presence of the noise, you don't know where the noise is affecting because of the non-stationary characteristics of the signal. So this is the underlying principle of this. So this technique is basically on the score normalization. So they call it as unconstrained cohort selection. Cohorting is a grouping. So basically an unconstrained grouping selection. So basically this technique was basically introduced to improve the score discrimination, and it is on fixed recognition system and under the varying signal quality, meaning that you have a lot of noise changing with respect to the time. And this is the database what he has used for his experiment. So basically there are 55 combined duration in the noise conditions you can see there. There are 55 different conditions there, and the duration of the voice is also changing in each of these condition. And you can also observe in the last row that the noise, signal to noise ratio, for instance, in the first five condition is clean. And then we have kind of noise from the AC, that is air conditioning, with different signal to noise ratio of 0 dB, 5 dB, 10 dB, so on. And in the last part from the session, from the conditions of 31 to 55, you can see that the voice samples are captured in the cloudy environment. So you have different quality of the signal present there. So basically idea of this technique is the optimal score normalization that tends to utilize the quad, where the audio characteristics corresponds best with probe and references are used. So you take this thing, and then, as I already pointed out, you do a pre-selection where the audio characteristics corresponds to reference and probe are selected such that it is having a good quality or the good content of the audio. So, and basically this is an automatically extract the reliable audio quality metrics and select the appropriate quad set. So given the two signal, you first do the quality estimation in some sense so that you can select or pre-select a component from the probe and the reference, and these selected components are used for the comparison. So this is an baseline performance. So as you can see here, the baseline performance has been given for two different kind of noise, the AC noise, that is air conditioning noise, and the crowded noise here. So x-axis is the time and the y-axis is the performance metric there. So what you can observe here is we have a color coding here, the signal to noise ratio is changing, and we have a clean noise. This is in the, for instance, in the first five sessions here, which is a clean noise, and we also have a cloudy noise present in the signal. So this is for the AC and this is for the cloud. In general sense, if you see the trending of the, I mean that the performance of the baseline system are extensively degraded when you have a cloud noise. So idea is to reduce this kind of distortion. To reduce this kind of distortion, the score normalization technique was introduced such that the audio characteristics of the reference and the probe samples are analyzed, and you do the pre-selection based on these audio quality features. Well, so this is what has been done. So basically a conventional normalization and cross-compare reference and probe against a quad set. The quad set is selected based on the audio quality for reference and probe. And you estimate top end coherent statistics and you just normalize. So if you do so, as you can observe from the proposed method, if you just observe the trends in the y-axis, so you can see that the maximum is 5, and now you come and see that the signal, how the performance is improved. Now we are only up to 0.7. So this is what is achieved if you just try to do some quality analysis. So this one way of approaching the quality analysis, basically you try to do some KL divergence of the reference and the probe, and based on the KL divergence you try to select, you try to pre-select the audio components for comparison. Well, and the most recent progress that has been achieved here, basically on the language mismatch. As I already pointed out, if you design or if you develop a system on one language and if I speak to it on another language, then it's a very challenging to recognize a speaker. So a lot of works are going on there. So English training data is basically from NIST and SRC is there. There is a development data from using a different language, and you have a evaluation data from different language. So this kind of analysis is already there. And there is also another corpus called as CallMeNet corpus. So it has different microphones, different environments, and 8 different conditions. And also there are a couple of work going on performance metrics. So they call it as average DCF. And there is also another kind of metrics which are in the plan there. So basically you can visit that nist.gov for that particular more information on the databases, what has been mentioned. Well, so this is the couple of references that was used, and this is just the contact. Well, so this is all about the voice. Any questions, any discussions? So as I already pointed out, the voice is basically nothing but a machine learning. So back end is completely a machine learning. The front end is having only 2 components. Very simple. You need to do the voice activity detection that you can do using a frequency spectrum, or you do the energy computation after the frequency spectrum, or you do the likelihood ratio of that one. Once you have this activity period, then you go and extract MFCC features. That is what you are going to do in the today's practical. So you take the speaker data and then you try to extract MFCC features. And once you extract MFCC features, you simply learn a Gaussian mixture over it. And then for the probe, you just do the log likelihood ratio. That is what is set for the today's practical in afternoon. So to wrap up, so you have this front end system basically on activity detection and MFCC, and in the back end you have a set of machine learning, and all this machine learning are mostly derived from the generative models. So popular thing is the Gaussian mixture model, and since the Gaussian mixture model somehow did not consider the channel variation, people started using joint factor analysis. That is nothing but it is considering the channel variation in addition to the voice or the speaker variation. So you have four components in joint factor analysis: speaker dependent, speaker independent, channel dependent, and channel residue. These four different components are jointly analyzed, means joint probability models. So for each of these component, you take a data, fit a GMM, and for all the things, you have four different kind of models that are combined together in a posterior manner to have one model. So that is joint factor analysis. So joint factor analysis will give a vector of, like, for instance 30,000 dimension. You want to take an intermediate vector out of it. To take the intermediate vector, the popular choice is to use the LDA. So LDA is what we learned in machine learning class. Plug in the LDA there and select one of the axes there from the LDA, and then you do WCNN, that is the covariance analysis. Once you do the covariance analysis, you can get a small length of the features that is called as an intermediate vectors. Once you have an intermediate vectors, again you can use all these deep learning things, restricted Blossman machine, autoencoders, denoising autoencoders. Those are all the tools which are there, or even the support vector machines. Plug in and take the decision. So this is how it is done, because a lot of work was done on the speaker recognition, and most of these deep learning techniques were emerged basically from speaker recognition before other modalities in the biometrics. So this is a thing. And other interesting work that I discussed is from the student. He's not here. Yeah, so he's a Christoph student. So basically he tried to see how we can use the quality. So rather than using a full signal for the reference and probe, he tried to do some quality-based pre-selection. For that, he tried to use, like, KL divergence is a technique what he basically used. So use the KL divergence, estimate the quality based on the audio characteristics of two signals, pre-select that, and then you compare it rather than comparing the full. So he shows that he already showed that those kind of pre-selection will certainly improve the performance of the system, especially in the noisy conditions, because of the non-stationary nature of the noise also. Well, that's it. So, did you guys manage to download this? Is it there on the blackboard or? If it is not there, then it's not there.
I don't think
no.
So.
Okay, so then I will send you guys by email.
Så det var bare klikk, så det var helt perfekt.
Jeg skjønner ikke hvor du har hentet den fra.
Det Emax.
Les det. Jeg hadde anet at det var flere som kunne ekstra å gjøre det.
To hizo y de norita y de no puedo chenota su mostrado de tilta con legado y pata y sati opa subjecto legado more subjecto a different attacks marigan different sentence alta 1 2 3 ataga 6 times 6 different legado
Ow! A.